speak about several of Joseph's admirable characteristics. Since I've spoken about Joseph in at least two messages in the past that I can remember, I'm sure I'm going to be repeating some of the past comments. And the title that I've given this is Joseph's Admirable Characteristics. For many years, Joseph has been one of my favorite Bible characters. Joseph set a sterling example in many ways. And over in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul said that these examples from the Old Testament are given for our learning and our admonition. And so we can draw some lessons for each one of us personally out of the good characteristics that Joseph had. Joseph had a lot of heart. He showed a lot of emotion. Joseph was forgiving. He was moral. He was loyal, dependable, trustworthy, and honest. And he saw the big picture. Joseph was a good businessman. So Joseph had a lot of admirable, good characteristics for us to adhere to and to follow. God used the family problem of Jacob having a favorite son and Joseph being his favorite son. And he used this family problem to send Joseph down to Egypt. Joseph was the oldest son of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel. As I said, Joseph was Jacob's favorite son. And to show that, in one regard, Jacob gave Joseph a coat of many colors. And the story of Joseph starts in Genesis, the 37th chapter, and you read two or three verses into it that Joseph brought a bad report of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And those sons were of Bilhah, who was Rachel's handmaid, were Dan and Naphtali. And Zilpah's two sons, and Zilpah was Leah's handmaid, were Gad and Asher. So Joseph brought a bad report of these four brothers of his to Jacob. When Joseph's brothers saw that Joseph was Jacob's favorite son, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. You read a few verses down here. And then Joseph made the situation worse by relating two dreams that he had. In the first one, his brothers would end up bowing down to him. In the second dream that he had, his father and his mother and all of his brothers were going to bow down to him. And these were God-given dreams that were fulfilled. And between Genesis 37 and Genesis 50, you read about, I think it's five or six cases where his brothers did, in fact, bow down to him. In one of those cases, when they bowed down to him, he remembered his dreams. So they did bow down to him and fulfill those dreams several times. So his brothers hated Joseph even more for his dreams and for his words. And when Jacob sent Joseph to check on his brothers who were out feeding their father's flocks, they faked Joseph's death. First they said they were going to kill him, but then Reuben said they ought not to do that. In verse 21 of Genesis 37. And then Judah said, well, why kill him? Why don't we just sell him when he saw some traders coming by? So they faked his death and sold him to some of the traders who were headed to Egypt. They took his coat of many colors and dipped it in the blood of a goat that they killed. And then they took that bloody tunic to their father Jacob. And so Jacob thought that Joseph had been killed by a wild beast, and he grieved for his son until they were reunited years later in Egypt. And so Joseph, or Jacob rather, thought that he would never see his son, Joseph, alive again. And when the traders got to Egypt, they sold Joseph to Potiphar, the captain of the guard of Pharaoh. And so I want to go through several points here that you can derive from the story of Joseph. And the first one is that Joseph showed exemplary character in some tough and trying circumstances in Egypt. Taken against his will and sold as a slave in Egypt, he could have been eaten up with bitterness toward his brothers for the wrong that they did to him. Joseph was moral. He could have succumbed to Mrs. Potiphar's advances day after day, but he refused them. He ran. He fled fornication, as the Apostle Paul commanded us over in the New Testament. Here is, in Genesis 39, is where he spurned Mrs. Potiphar's advances. You read in the last sentence, the last part of verse 6 of Genesis 39, that Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. I guess you ladies would think he was a real hunk. Now it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." We'd say, "Let's go to bed." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness, in which he would have been committing fornication and she would have been committing adultery, and sin against God?" So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed to lie with her or to be with her. Looking forward, King David would have suffered a lot less in the remainder of his life if he had had the approach of Joseph with Bathsheba. When he saw this beautiful woman bathing from up on his house, he sent some of his men to check on who it was, and they found out that she was a man's wife. And instead of letting it go at that, he had her brought. And he committed adultery with her, and she got pregnant. And then he has her husband killed to try to cover it up. So David would have suffered a lot less if he had followed Joseph's example in the case of Bathsheba. Joseph went into the house one day when there were none of the men in there. And so Mrs. Potiphar made another big advance toward Joseph. When she grabbed his garment and asked him to go to bed with her again, Joseph left his garment in her hand and he ran outside. Ms. Potiphar then accused Joseph of attempting to rape her to the men who were there. And when Mr. Potiphar came home, she lied to him. And of course, he got really mad and he throws Joseph in prison. So here's another case of where Joseph could have really become bitter. He could have reasoned, "Now here I do what's right. I don't sin against God. And I get thrown in prison." And so in these cases, Joseph is a very good example for us to follow, the good characteristics that he had. Oh, that we would have followed his example in some of our pre-church lives. Secondly, Joseph had a lot of heart. Joseph had a lot of heart. He was an emotional individual. There's several occasions where he wept and showed a lot of emotion. In fact, every time you turn around, there's Joseph weeping again in Genesis 42. When his brothers were in Egypt. They had made comments about being sorry for what they had done to Joseph in verses 21 and 22. Joseph had been speaking to them through an interpreter, so they did not know that he understood what they had said. But they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter in verse 23. And he turned himself away from them and wept. He cried. Then he returned to them again and talked with them, and he took Simeon from before them and bound him before their eyes. So Joseph showed a lot of emotion. He wept again in chapter 43. In verse 30, when Benjamin was brought back the second time, Joseph had kept Simeon in prison and sent the rest of his brothers back with supplies, with grain, and told them, look, you bring Benjamin back. He accused them of being spies. He had put them all in prison. He kept Simeon and sent them back with grain, put all the money in their sacks, so they had the money that they had paid for the grain given back to them. And so in verse 30, now his heart yearned for his brother. So Joseph made haste, sought somewhere to weep, and he went into his chamber and wept there. In chapter 45, when he's reunited with his brothers, he weeps again. And in verse 14, after he'd made himself known to his brothers, in chapter 45, he fell on his brother's Benjamin's neck and wept. And there's two or three more cases of where he did that. He could have punished his brothers on several occasions. Here the man is governor over all of Egypt. He's second in command to Pharaoh. And he could have had them thrown in prison. Probably he could have had them executed. He had the power to do that. Whatever Joseph said went. You see that going through the story. So he could have punished them and gotten even with them, but he didn't. Not on his brother's first trip to Egypt, which is in chapter 42. In which case he did keep Simeon as the prisoner in verse 24 that we just read. Donna wondered in reading through this about if Simeon was chosen by Joseph because he was one of the ones that wanted to kill him before he was sold into Egypt. In Genesis 49, In Genesis 49, where Jacob is going over what's going to happen to his sons in the last days. Hold your place back there. In Genesis 49, he says, I'm going to tell you what shall befall you in the last days, the days in which we're living. And notice what he says about Simeon and Levi in verse 5. Their brothers, instruments of cruelty or violence, are in their habitation. Let not my soul enter into their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce. They had fierce anger. And their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So they weren't going to have their own territory. They were going to be scattered in Israel, Simeon and Levi. And that'd be a good question to ask one of these days, Joseph. Why did you choose Simeon out of all of these brothers here? And maybe that's why. So they were violent. Simeon and Levi were violent, and not on their second trip when Benjamin was brought along. Joseph could have done them great wrong then, but he didn't. And not after Jacob's death. The brothers really feared what Joseph might do after Jacob died. And in verse 15, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil that we did to him." So they sent messages to Joseph saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil against you. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father.'" And so Joseph said, "I have been waiting for this day for years. Now it's my time." No, he didn't. Look how he reacted. He said, "And Joseph wept when they spoke to him." So instead of shaking his fist at them and saying, "I'm going to grind you into the dust, I'm going to have you executed," he wept. And then his brothers also went down and fell down before his face. See, here they're bowing down before him again. This time, "Behold, we are your servants." They're offering to be his slaves or his servants. And Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid." He was comforting and encouraging, a good example for us. "For am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me. But God meant it for good in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive. Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Or in the margin, the New King James has "spoke to their hearts." So instead of grinding them into the dirt, instead of executing them as they would have deserved, he forgave them. And you remember what Christ said in like Matthew 5 or 6, that in right after the Lord's Prayer, that if we are going to have God forgive us, we have got to be forgiving of others. And so Joseph was forgiving of others who had done him great evil. And not only did he forgive them, but he said, "I'll take care of you." And he comforted them and he spoke kindly to them. So Joseph showed much compassion, mercy, and he had a lot of heart and emotion, and he was forgiving. And these are good characteristics for us to aspire to. And Joseph being forgiving was my third point, and I've already gone through it before I got to it. A sidebar on Joseph's brothers. When they saw Joseph coming to check on them, they said, "Let's kill him." And then they sold him to the traitors instead. And so these brothers have had a change in heart and attitude also, which you can see in the story. The brothers had witnessed for years the grief of their father that they had caused. They must have had huge guilt and remorse for what they had done, as evidenced by their attitudes when they came into Egypt. Turn back to Genesis 42. 42nd chapter of Genesis. Joseph is speaking to them through an interpreter. They don't know that he understands what they are saying. And beginning in verse 21 of Genesis 42. "Then they said to one another, 'We are truly guilty concerning our brother. For we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. therefore this distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. They thought they were getting paid back for all of the wrong, the evil that they had done to Joseph. Jacob had another favorite son, Benjamin, who was the second son of his favorite wife, Rachel. The brothers had a different attitude toward Benjamin being a favorite son of Jacob than they had had with Joseph. They were willing to sacrifice themselves, Judah in this case, so that Benjamin could go back to his father and not cause him grief. In Genesis, the 44th chapter, they came again the second time. They brought Benjamin with them. Joseph has them fill their sacks, place their money back in the sacks, and he put his silver cup in Benjamin's bag. And so they leave, and Joseph sends his men after them, and they find the cup in Benjamin's sack. And, of course, their heads are hung, and they go back, and they say, we'll be your slaves. And Joseph tells them, no, just leave Benjamin, and you go back. And then Judah intercedes. In chapter 44, Jacob did not want to send Benjamin down to Egypt because of calamity would befall him. It'd take his heart down to the grave. And with sorrow to the grave, you read in verse 31. And so Judah intercedes and offers to stay as a slave in Benjamin's place so Benjamin can go back to his father. And let's pick the story up beginning in verse 30. Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will happen when he sees that the lad is not with us that he will die. So your servants will bring down the gray hair of your servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave to my lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father? So isn't it fitting here that Judah, the progenitor of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, offered to enslave himself instead of Benjamin so that Benjamin could go back to his father? Fourth item, Joseph saw the big picture. He was a good project leader, a good organizer, a good businessman. Joseph had a lot of business and organizational ability and was loyal, dependable, and trustworthy. Joseph demonstrated these God-given abilities when he was in Potiphar's house. When Potiphar saw that God was with Joseph and made all that Joseph did to prosper, Potiphar promoted Joseph to being overseer of his house and put all that he had in Joseph's hands. Potiphar left it all in Joseph's hands with such trust that Potiphar reached a point where he did not know even what he had except for the food that he ate. In Genesis, the 39th chapter, uh, beginning in verse 5, "So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate." He trusted Joseph so much because he was such a good hand. And Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, which took Mrs. Potiphar's notice. When Joseph was falsely accused of rape by Mrs. Potiphar and thrown in prison by Mr. Potiphar, God had mercy again, was with Joseph, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. The same thing happened again as it happened with Potiphar. The keeper of the prison put all of the prisoners under Joseph and did not look into anything that Joseph was doing, because God made everything that Joseph did to prosper. In Genesis, the 39th chapter, beginning in verse 21, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hands all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it to prosper." There's some thought that Joseph was crippled or walked with a limp because of what it says in Psalms 105, I believe it is. Hold your place there and turn to Psalm 105. Starting about verse 16 in Psalm 105. "Moreover, he called for a famine in the land. He destroyed all the provision of bread. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They hurt his feet with fetters. He was laid in iron." Until the time that his word came to pass. And so Joseph may have been crippled. He may have been walked with a limp because of the damage to his feet from being bound in fetters. So God made everything to prosper here in the prison, just as he had in Potiphar's house. When God caused Pharaoh to have dreams, beginning in chapter 41 of Genesis, Joseph not only interpreted the dreams with God's inspiration, but he went on to recommend a course of action to Pharaoh. Joseph saw the big picture. Joseph obviously did not see much of Egypt on his first trip to Egypt, because he was tied up and brought as a slave. After Pharaoh promoted him from prisoner to governor, the first thing he did was make a tour of Egypt. He had to see what the lay of the land looked like. He's got to set up all of these storage places, these granaries, and set up a system for gathering the excess in the 7 years of plenty. He needed to see the country that he was now governor in order to organize the collection and the storing of grain during the prophesied 7 years of plenty. Joseph gathered so much grain that they stopped counting it. In Genesis 41, verse 49, "Joseph gathered so much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting it, for it was without number." I mean, the storage places were overflowing. Pharaoh's approach with Joseph was the same that it had been with Potiphar, the same that it was with the keeper of the prison. When the Egyptians came, ran out of bread, and they came to Pharaoh, notice what he told them in verse 55 of Genesis 41. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Then Pharaoh said to all Egyptians, "Will you just go see Joseph, and whatever he tells you to do, that you do. Go to Joseph, whatever he says to you, do." He left it all. You see, he had such trust in how good and organized and how businesslike this man was. So Joseph sold grain to all of Egypt and Canaan, collecting the money for Pharaoh. Pharaoh became an incredibly wealthy individual. All the money in Egypt, that's Genesis 47, verses 13 and 14. Now there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. When their money ran out, Joseph gave them bread in exchange for all of their livestock. You read in verses 15 to 17 of the same chapter. After the money and livestock were gone, Joseph gave them bread in exchange for their land. In Genesis 47, 18 through 22. So all of the land of the Egyptians, except for the land of the priests, became Pharaoh's. Like I said, he became an incredibly wealthy man. He had all the money, all the land, except what belonged to the priests. And then Joseph gave them seed to plant with the provision that one-fifth of their produce would be given to Pharaoh. In verse 23 of chapter 47. Then Joseph said to the people, "Indeed, I have bought you and your land this day for Pharaoh. Look, here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the harvest that you shall give one-fifth to Pharaoh, four-fifths shall be your own as seed for the field and for your food for those of your households and as food for your little ones." As we can see from these examples, Joseph was blessed with a lot of business and organizational ability, which has been passed down to the descendants of his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, the British Commonwealth, and the United States of America. To fulfill Jacob's end-time prophecy concerning Joseph in Genesis 49, Joseph would have to be a good businessman. In Genesis 49, you remember we read verse 1 where Jacob called his sons just before he died. He called his sons, "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days." And notice, let's read what he said about Joseph beginning in verse 22. "Joseph is a fruitful bough, a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall." He would be a colonizing people. And Ephraim spread around the earth so that the sun didn't even set on the British Empire at one time. "The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him, but his bow remained in strength. And the arms of his hand were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob." It's no accident that we won World War I, World War II. "From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel, by the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you with the blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breast and of the womb." His descendants would be blessed in every way, physically, tremendously blessed. The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors up to the uttermost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who was separate from his brother. And so Joseph had to be a good businessman in order for these prophecies to be fulfilled. Joseph was a very noble individual. Joseph saw the big picture. He gave God the credit. He exhibited much faith during the distressing time that he was a slave. He had a lot of heart and emotion. He was merciful and compassionate. He was moral, and he did not commit sex sins with his master's wife when he easily could have done so. Joseph was forgiving and did not have a vengeful attitude toward his brothers for the evil that they did to him. He had the power to do them much physical harm, but he refrained from doing so. Joseph was blessed to have much business and organizational ability, which has been passed down through his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. We are an incredibly blessed people because of the faithfulness of Joseph. May God help us all to be more like the positive, noble example of Joseph.